Hi, I'm comedian Joe Matarese, and this is my podcast, Pretender to Contender. This is what I do on every show. Every episode, I'll be interviewing someone who's in an entrepreneurial field who started out as a pretender and through many trials and errors took that idea that just started as just a dream and they figured out how to become a contender. If you know me, you know why that fascinates me so much. You're listening to Pretender to Contender with Joe Matarese. Pretender to Contender is now on Archive, everybody. It's on Archive. A few little things you need to know. Take a look in the show description. Now there's a button where you can just contribute. It's right there in the description for the show. Also, there's another button where you're going to be able to subscribe to the podcast and get episodes that are only for subscribers only. That's coming really soon. But we're not there yet. But the contribute button is there. So please help me out. I really appreciate it. It'll be really nice of you. Hey everybody, this is Joe, and the show has started. How the heck are you? Welcome to the podcast. Excited about this one. We have a great guest, a comedian by the name of Avi Lieberman. I don't know if you guys know him. You may have heard his name on my podcast before. I've probably mentioned him, especially back in the day when I did the tour that he started in Israel. I did it probably about 9 years ago, and it's an amazing feat, and I always wanted to have him on this podcast, Pretender to Contender, which is, because he did something amazing, very entrepreneurial. He started a comedy tour in Israel, which they weren't really having comedy there, and it was a place that really needed comedy, and his roots were there, and he started this tour, and I don't want to give too much away before he explains it all, but I found a little program, I guess it was a news story they did on Avi and what he started over there. So I'll let them explain, okay? So let's cut to that. This is them explaining Avi Lieberman and the tour he started in Israel that's now called Comedy, the Comedy for Kobe Tour. Listen to this.
Blame the Mossad. I'm not kidding, right? What did a shark swim by with a yarmulke on his hand?
It's the December leg of the multi-city Comedy for Kobe Tour of Israel, and we're in the town of Ra'anana. This comedy event features some of America's top stand-up comedians. Los Angeles funny guy Avi Lieberman organizes twice yearly tours to raise funds for the Kobe Mandel Foundation. On May 8, 2001, 13-year-old Kobe Mandel and a friend were killed by Arab terrorists near their Tekoa home. Kobe's parents, Seth and Sherry Mandel, started a foundation in their son's memory that runs programs of healing, primarily for families of terror victims.
One of the things about the comedy show for myself and my wife and my family is it really turns around sort of the tragedy into something much more positive, much more enlivened.
So thanks for reaching out and wanting to do the podcast. I didn't even know you were a guy that would like cared about pod. Like some comedians, you never know. Like they might just, they're just like, I don't want to do a podcast.
I have no problem with it since when I've never heard of a comic that doesn't mind that, you know, one, schmoozing with another comic, you know,
right.
Who wants to talk to regular people when you have an opportunity to talk with someone else who's been the same crap that you have.
Right.
And Joe's funny. So like, I'll do the podcast if it's Matt Reese. He's a funny cat. So
look what I'm wearing for you.
Oh, quiet, please. That's
This my ADD so bad that you would have thought I wore this because you were my guest today. Everybody, you can't see us. We're on Zoom right now. But
quiet, please, which is one of my favorite jokes that Joe's ever done. And I would constantly ask him when we did the Israel tour, you've got to do the quiet, please chunk of material because it always makes me laugh.
Right. So, and with this podcast with Pretender to Contender, like, if I have a comedian on, which I've had lots of them on, I don't want to just talk to them about being a comedian. And it's perfect if a comedian has a specific thing that I think they really took from Pretender to Contender. You know, like Mike Vecchione was my last episode, you know, and he's just like a workhorse. So he's like a guy that could is just such a how to, you know, do well in stand-up comedy. He was, you know, he's done The Tonight Show. He's been on Netflix. He's got a podcast. He's touring with Nate Bargatze now.
He went to Israel, did the Comedy for Kobe tour. You know, that's how you've really made it, Joe, once you've done that tour. Right?
Yeah, so. But like your thing, I mean, taking this tour, I mean, the official title of the tour is...
Comedy for Kobe Kobe. And we basically started, this goes back, I think, 2003. It's hard to think it was that long ago. But there were like terrorist attacks in Israel and the mood was awful and nobody was going. And so I just went to support. I was like, I'm just going to go to Israel as a sign of solidarity. I was born there. It moved to the States when I was 3.5. And my parents are American, but, my brother and I were born there. We moved back when I was very little. So culturally, I'm American, but I have citizenship of both countries. I was always obviously a supporter and a fan. And a friend of mine, while I was over there, she worked with teens at risk in the Jerusalem area.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of almost as a goof, she goes, Avi, why don't you come and do a show for my kids? I'm like, I'm not doing a show for a bunch of, you know, drugged up, angry teenagers. And then I got back to the States. I was like, you know what? English is such a huge part of the culture there. I mean, there's sort of three quote unquote official, not official languages. You have English, Arabic, and Hebrew. Like all the street signs are in all three languages. Most well-educated Israelis, most Israelis know English anyway. There are enough Americans and Brits and Canadians that live there. What if we tried to do a show? Let's just give everybody sort of a safe, fun night out and see how that goes. So long story short, got in touch with the promoter who this guy, you know, had brought Elton John to Israel. That's in like huge acts. And my mom was very helpful. And like, she worked for the Jewish Life television network when she was here. Oh. She was like, you should talk to this promoter guy. And he's like, listen, I have no other business coming in. Let's try it.
Started off as just like a one. You were going to do one show in Israel. That was the plan.
We were going to do four, and that went down to three. And the first tour ever was myself, Wayne Fetterman, Dan Natterman, and Gary Gulman.
Okay, four Jewish comics come over to Israel.
Your last name had to be MAN, I think, to get on that tour. So
perfect.
And it just sort of snowballed from there over the years and just sort of turned into, in a weird way, it sort of outgrew that, you know, we did it with this guy once and he liked the idea and he said, I'll do it again, but I can't pay for the flights. Like he sort of took a mini loss on that.
So I don't want to speak out of turn and talk on top of you. So this tour started not even being a fundraiser for anything.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
I never knew that. Okay.
Yeah. It was just to like brighten the mood of people. My friend said, the one who initially suggested it, she goes, why don't we make it a fundraiser? And I said, okay. And then she sort of took it over, and then it sort of word got out. You know, in the beginning, we were playing, like anything else, I think in today's world of like instant gratification, I want to be a star tomorrow. Like I only have the attention span of a TikTok. Everybody wants things right now. They want it immediately. But that's just, you know, anything that's going to build into something good, that just doesn't happen. Like it's like with stand-up, you know, you're going to suck when you first start. That's just true. Chris Rock was not great when he first started. No one was.
Right.
That's why I've always found, you know, most comics are pretty nice guys to newer comedians. It's even the ones that are famous. Cause they've been there. They remember what it's like.
So you're telling me that Israel had never brought comedy over there before, ever?
Not like we're having sort of a tour in English. No, at that point, to my understanding, I don't recall like that. You know, like now it's like standard, almost like Chris Rock has been there, Seinfeld's been there, Louis C.K. was there during our last tour. Gaffigan was supposed to go there, and then stuff. You know, so he's done small shows there when he was touring. He was there just for Easter with his family. Now it's sort of like a regular stop. Bill Burr has done shows there. I talked to Sebastian about it, and then it was like right before he exploded and became a big deal, but he was into it. Now it's sort of like a standard, if you're a major, major star, Israel is one of the places that you would hit internationally.
Well, that's weird because, I mean, I've only been there once when you brought me over there, but one thing that amazed me when I went over there is how many people that are that grew up in the United States get married and raise their families over there. There's so many American people living there. And has it always been that way, or does it become that way?
That sort of changed over the years in a sense, because it sort of used to be Israel was sort of this, you know, it was a haven. If you were Jewish and lived in some country that was awful, that's going through something terrible, that Israel was sort of like if you were in the old Soviet Union or you were in Argentina with a economic collapse years ago, and that, you know, or you were in Ethiopia or wherever it was, Israel was where you could go and run, you know, and escape to, and you'd end up at least in a better situation than the one you were previously in, as right. tough as Israel is to grow up in and live in. It was still better than growing up in Ethiopia, you know, for example. So, but now, that sort of changed. There aren't really that, you know, like when I was a kid, we'd do protests for Soviet Jewry. That's over. That, you know, so Israel sort of shifted and said, you know what, instead of us becoming like sort of this life preserver, why don't we try to target people that aren't going to be economic burdens initially, you know, so let's get people that have established jobs and money and this and want to come live here, and we'll sort of, you know, try to get them here. And that, and they began to target the West, like, let's go after Americans and Brits and show them why living here might be a better, especially if you're more traditional, more religious, this might be a better place for you to be. It shifted from the Jewish Agency to a group called Nefesh B'Nefesh. The government sort of said, we give in, you guys are better at this than we are. Okay. And they sort of let them do it. So you have targeted, the more people moving to Israel nowadays are coming from, like, they're established already. That, you know, there's a guy in my synagogue, he's an ER doctor. He does 3 weeks in Israel, 1 week here. So he comes here and makes his money. You know, he'll sort of moonlight as an ER doctor. But he prefers to spend most of his time in Israel. He prefers to raise his kids there. So you have a lot of people who are doing that. Not a lot, but that's like, you know, it's not as abnormal as you would think.
Your mom and dad, I mean, if you lived there till you were three, did your mom and dad grow up there?
No, they're Americans, and they moved there. They grew up in like a youth movement where it's, you know, you move to Israel. They lived on the kibbutz, you know, the old school 60s, you know.
So they did the like birthright, and then they just started to like it there?
That didn't exist back then, but then basically most people would spend a year in between high school and college if you grew up, like, you know, there are a lot of different programs that you can do.
Okay.
And they grew up and they moved there, lived on the kibbutz, the whole thing. I was born on one, and that, you know, they moved there in 68, like after the Six-Day War when everybody was kind of drunk, you know, like, oh, everything's perfect, you know, and great. And then the Yom Kippur War came and sort of the country went bankrupt and there weren't a lot of jobs and my dad was studying. So he got into a doctorate program in the States, you know, and they said, don't pass that up. So he went there and the plan was to move back. But my cousins, it's weird when you become an adult, they tell you later, we knew they weren't going to come back. You know, once you establish your life, you know, it's kind of tough, right. But I was connected to
it. And they're back living there now, right?
No. Well, my mom was, but she actually just moved back. She's living with my brother and his family. He's married with kids, so I think she enjoys being near the grandkids. It just got too hard. You know, she's 78, just had her birthday yesterday, actually.
Why do I feel like when you brought me over there that I remember visiting your father. Was he there?
They might have been there vacationing or something for the first time in years, because my dad and stepmom, but they live in Houston. That's where I grew up.
I got you. Okay, so go back to the tour. So you start, you're doing once a year for how long?
Yeah, we're doing it once a year for, I think, definitely the first three or four, I think, minimum. And I would spend, like, all year. It's because the comics I wanted to bring, I wanted them to be at, like, your level. You know, like, you know, Letterman, Tonight Show, Ferguson, Conan credits. You know, yeah. I wanted them to, like, have done TV, be really strong.
Right. It's a headliner show, and it's got to be kind of clean because it's religious.
Right, yeah, and I didn't, you know, most of the audiences, I would say, not most, like Tel Aviv, you can do whatever you want, but I would say half the shows, people, you know, they want it to be clean, and I think the audiences, in a strange way, not us, take more of a pride, it's like, see, this is clean shows, look how funny these guys are, and they're clean, they don't have to drop 15 F-bombs at every show, you know, but it's funny, in Tel Aviv, they'd get annoyed, they'd be like, we know these guys are holding back, this is ridiculous, so Tel Aviv is quote-unquote the naughty show. It's, you know, so I'll see like really religious people show up to Tel Aviv. I'd be like, what, you know, the woman's hair is covered. I'm like, what are you doing here? She's like, we know what goes on here. That's why I wanted to come to this show. You know, so it's kind of funny. But it, I mean, when we first started, we're playing lecture halls and bars and, you know, we were doing the best we could. It's, but like anything else, it takes time to build up sort of a fan base that, you know, get the word out that, hey, this is a show that you're not, you know, even in the States, you're not going to see, you know, comics of this guy, unless you're in like LA, New York, you know, a few other cities, Boston, Chicago, mm-hmm. you're not going to get comics of this caliber, you know, seeing these guys in the States and in most U.S. cities, let alone in Israel. So
now has anyone, I mean, so you're saying 2003. So, I mean, do the math. It's, you know, it's about 20 years. Is the 20 year reunion, is that going to be a special tour for the 20th?
See, because it's confusing because people asked when we started this. Now it's sort of morphed into the Comedy for Kobe tour, benefiting the Kobe Mandel Foundation.
Yeah, they work with. We got to get to that in the story.
Yeah, yeah. So, so people ask, well, what number is this? I go, it depends on with what group. You know, with the Kobe tour, I think they had their 25th or something tour, or 20th. But then we started doing it twice a year, and even that story is crazy. Like how we ended up, we're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know. I think if you just push and press with something long enough, that's positive. Positive things are going to come your way. It's, you know, you put out kind of positive energy, it'll come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's even that. I don't know if you want to hear that. Like how we were able to fund this was even like insane.
Yeah, I want to hear everything because that's kind of the pretender to contender story. And I always liked it. It's amazing when you get the story, no matter what the entrepreneurial field is how much it crosses over to other businesses and how it's all similar. And it's something I've always been interested in because I, you know, there's not a lot of comedians where I live in New Rochelle, New York. There's like a couple. So, but there are a lot of people that are, you know, they're running a clothing business, their own clothing, and it's amazing how it all. And I'm like, we should all get together and talk because being a comedian is just like owning a restaurant or running a clothing business. It's like you got to figure out how to make this thing succeed.
Yeah, it's constantly coming up with ideas.
Yeah,
and our ideas happen to be jokes. So it's but you have streams of ideas that aren't always jokes. It, you know, and that happens sometimes.
Has anyone ever come to you saying, I want to try to, cause you've done it and a lot of people fail. I mean, sometimes they last for a while. I mean, like I would say a similar business is like the Montreal Comedy Festival. I'm sure it started small and it turned into what it is now. And
yeah, they weren't having thousands of people show up at once. And that, you know, I think in, you know, you have to, everything is not going to end up, you know, I think you have to honestly assess after a certain amount of time, how's this going?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, if we all quit after our first 10 or 15 times on stage, there'd be no one on stage. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, but after a while, if you sort of have a gut feeling or an intuition, I can do this. You know, we all started with people that aren't doing it anymore. That, you know, and there's a reason. I think that David Feldman told me this once, like years ago, he's a great comic, you know, and writer.
Amazing.
He said, listen, if you're a comic and you've been doing this for a long, long time and you've never done any TV at all, like ever, I don't care if it's comedy, a small thing, Comedy Central, a cable thing, ask yourself why. If you can't construct 5 minutes that is good enough to get on something, some obscure cable show, it doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be the Tonight Show. It's, you know, you may want to ask yourself, like, what's going on? That, you know, how much have you been paid? Have you made money of this? Have you been able to tour? Have you been able to keep a roof over your head? That, you know, and I think that's true with any business. I think that's, you know, I invented a widget, whatever it is, and I've been, you know, trying to push this thing for 10, 15 years. It's never gone anywhere. That's, you know, assess why. But that's, you know, there are always those stories, you know, of the Godfather that sat on a shelf for 20 some years until somebody decided to make it. That, you know, that's the hard part, is that you do have all those stories that kind of like, you know, it's that can tempt you into like doing something that may not be, you know, for you or may in the end work, you know, who
right.
knows. It's my acting teacher years ago, Stephen Book, who like kind of teaches through improv, is a great teacher. So he said, it's the hardest and best day of your life is what he calls the realization of a truth. It's, oh no, maybe I'm not going to have my own sitcom. Maybe I'm not going to be a movie star. Maybe I'm not, you know. Says realizing that is the most painful, but at the same time, the best thing, because it frees you up from this.
Yeah.
It's, I'm going to go do this instead.
It can put you in a direction of something that you could be successful at. If you do analyze it, it's interesting because my wife, how I say every job connects, My wife is a doctor who studies Alzheimer's disease, but she had to find a specific niche, and one of her specific niches was awareness and how certain patients were aware of their memory loss and others weren't. There's a lot of awareness as a performer. If you have no awareness that it's not working and you need to change something to make it work, you know, then you're going to fail for a long time if you don't.
Yeah, to be in the moment, something as simple as crowd work. If I'm talking to somebody and I realize this is not going well, like it's time to move on, like talk to somebody else.
All right.
Did you all go through that?
Well, so that's a good segue. So speaking of, like, I would love to know, what are some of the things early on when you started to bring comedians over to Israel from the United States that it went wrong? This doesn't work. And you learned a lesson and you obviously probably had to figure out how to not do that anymore.
I knew this kind of beforehand from doing some small shows in the States, but all Jews is no good. Let's bring in as many non-Jews as we can.
Yeah, how long did it take you to figure that out?
It was quick, because I realized that it's just, we think similarly. Any culture, you're going to have some, you know, it doesn't matter the intensity of how involved you are in that particular culture, mm-hmm. religion, whatever it may be, that there's going to be crossover. So a show is more fun when it's a more varied show, you know, a show with variety. So it's, let's get everybody over. So that's, you know, and that was my own insecurity. So I was like, oh, well, do I blend these two worlds of like my Jewish life and the stand-up world?
Remember the first comic who was not Jewish that you brought over there and he was killing and you were like, oh my God, this is awesome. Yeah,
he was so funny. It wouldn't matter. I think the first tour was all Jews. Well, the first one, I in a way, I couldn't get anybody else to go. That was also part of the problem. There were suicide bombings. The news was the news and people knew so Fetterman was the first one who accepted, but he's Jewish. And that gave me some street cred to get the other guys. Cause like, oh, if Wayne's going, you know, Steve White, I think, was the very first one. The second tour we ever did, Steve White did this, and I just saw them losing it because obviously their minds operate in a different fashion than ours. They're seeing things in a different light than someone who's Jewish going to Israel.
Well, it's interesting. That's interesting because I always tell people the best sitcoms are either fish out of water situations. A situation comedy is a situation, or opposites. And I always say, Cheers put a bunch of people from all different, you know, lifestyles in at one bar, and it was like, and it made sense because it was a bar, it wasn't forced. So yeah, you bring a black guy as far opposite as Jewish as you can get, and it's fucking comedy gold.
Yeah, that's what it is. So that used to be my standard joke. I go Jew, white guy, black guy. Like that's what I'm looking for. It's, you know, obviously women, whatever, involved in that category also. That, you know, like the last tour we had, I had that's Amir Kay, Ian Bagg, and Gina Brion. So it's, you couldn't get three more different.
Right.
It's also interesting for me to see sometimes like you know, who's going to hang out with who, because sometimes that shocks me. That as the kind of just like, oh, these three are going to, and some tours are like everybody goes and does their own thing, and some are real pack rats. Like, what are we doing? Then everything is sort of together. So, I just want kind of like a different, varied tour.
So how did you figure out the business model of it all?
Well, that comes into play about that. So what I used to do, the business model, again, it was a work in progress. I would say when we were doing the tour once a year, the problem were the flights. How can we afford to do this? You know, ticket sales aren't going to cover so much, but we got to cover, you know, I wanted people to go business class. It's a hall and comics at this level. I don't want them going coach unless they're extenuating circumstances and that, you know, they've got worry that last minute or things like that. They don't mind. We fly enough and have slugged that out enough, you know, when we get upgrades, when we don't, it's not the end of the world for some guys. Mm-hmm. So, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll go to a synagogue or a school or whatever it is. And I say, I'll put together a show for you. You keep all the money, do it at the improv, whatever you want. But I need a business class seat. You have somebody with miles? Great. You make out like a bandit. So for some organizations, they were very into that. That was enticing to them. So I would do that.
So you bartered things.
Yeah, I would offset. I'd offset the cost of the flight. Oh, we have a donor who has 100,000 miles and wants to donate that to a ticket. You know, it doesn't cost you any money in cash, and you can keep all the money from the gate. So a group named Stand With Us, they do like advocacy on college campuses. They stood up, and this woman, Roz Rothstein, who's like great. She's like a go-getter. So she was able to do that.
So how did you find this? I mean, that's not something you just naturally are smart enough to know. Oh, I'm going to go barter so I can get business class flights for all the comedians.
Well, it was just an idea I had because I realized that you know, if you're a charity, they're always looking to fundraise. Mm-hmm. And I said, here's a way that I can call comics in for favors. Hey, it's just a spot at the Improv. You guys want to come and do this? That's not the end of the world for us.
Right.
You know, we'll throw you $100, whatever. More than what you'd get for a regular set. So if they're around, you know, obviously you have to know personalities. Like, you know, someone's like a Craig Robinson or a Jeff Ross. Those guys are so big that I know I can't.
People should also know if they're listening. Avi lives in Los Angeles. He's around, you know, superstar comedians all the time.
So, yeah, so that's, I know, like, Craig and Jeff don't, they can't be pressured into, like, you have to be here at this time to do this spot. They're busy. Like, what if they get a corporate, you know, they have a lot of stuff going on. So I know if I tell them, hey, guys, show up if you want. If not, not a problem. So Craig loves hearing that. And they'd always show up. You know, Craig would show up. It's because, hey, go and have a great time and enjoy yourself and have a great set, whatever. If he can't make it, he can't make it. But it was great when he'd show up at one of these shows and he'd be a special guest and the audience would love it. You know, so that's how, you know, and then the charity would love it. Holy crap, you know, Craig Robinson can't, you know, so just those examples are guys of that caliber. You know, so that's how I would play it. You have to, you know your customers. And some comics, you know, I'd say, listen, I need you to confirm and be able to do this. You know, so that's how I would do it for a while. And then I get a call from that same organization, Stand With Us. They go, listen, they have a chapter in New York. This girl calls me. Hey, Abby, listen, we're doing this show in New York. Can you come and perform at this? And we're going to try to raise some money for the organization. If we have anything left over from what our target is, we'll give you a little bit of it to help towards your tour in Israel. I go, sure. They basically could pay for my flight. But it's New York, whatever. I'll stay with a friend. You know, I'll see some friends in New York. That's kind of how I viewed it. Okay. So I did it. And all of a sudden, I'm in synagogue. I don't know if you know Mark Schiff.
Yeah. I did a corporate gig for him.
Synagogue, and he hands me this letter. I'm not going to say the name of the celebrity, but Mark comes up to me. He goes, you should read this letter. And it was to dear such and such celebrity who has a foundation that helps kids, you know, go to college and all this stuff. I was going to quit school and go to work because I was out of money, this, and I applied for a scholarship, got it from your friend. I was able to finish school, went to Israel. My mom's Jewish, my dad is, and I decided to look into my Jewish heritage. I flew to Israel, did a semester there for you. Now I've met my now fiance. I'm moving there. My whole life has changed just because of this. And so we're doing this thing in New York. If we have any extra money, we're giving it to this tour, comedy tour in Israel. And so I'm sitting here reading about my program. Just Mark, I was like, where did you get this letter? He's like, the celebrity's family sent it to me going, what is this? Because he's tight with this particular celebrity. Uh-huh. He goes, what is it? And so the family goes, what is this comedy tour in Israel? Do you know this about this? And Mark says, yeah, I go to the synagogue with the guy who runs it. He goes, so he answers this letter and they go, tell them I'm going to call him. So I get a call from one of the family members of the celebrity who helps him with the charitable stuff, mm-hmm. and goes, what is this? And I explain it to them and they go, what's your biggest headaches? And I say, the flights just kill me. Like, it's really hard all year, you know, cause you know, Jews take a year and a half to plan a luncheon. Like, it's like ridiculous. So I gotta like start on this crap in September for a tour we're doing in June, you know,
right.
And I'm hunting down like three different charities to try to raise money for these tickets. Mm-hmm. The family member goes, well, we have a few million miles on this Amex card. I forgot we even have, so I don't see that being a problem. And I was like thrilled with that. I was like, oh my God, what a massive help. Then they go, what are the expenses? And we were always doing everything on the cheap. So I say the expenses were whatever. It was like in the teens of thousands of dollars. And there was this like audible pause on the phone. I think they were expecting to hear like 50, 60 grand. Mm-hmm. And they go, yeah, we'll cover that too. They go, you want to do this more than once a year? I go, I've always wanted to try it in the wintertime. Yeah, let's do that too. Have a nice day. I'll call you later. What? And I was just like, you know, dumbfounded. I was like smacked in the, you know, in a good way. I was like, you know, it was amazing. And that's kind of what started it. Oddly enough, this year, because of COVID, we've lost some of the funding. So we're still trying to get back. But thank God it's still.
Well, did this celebrity fund it before you had it connected to a charity?
Was it one?
Did this celebrity come in and start funding your, you know, the expenses before it was connected to being a fundraiser for this family?
It was already for the charity at this point, but okay. It was already being done for charity, a different one than we were doing it for.
What was the other charity?
It was called Crossroads. They work with teens at risk in the Jerusalem area.
Okay.
But it was very local and centered, but it's sort of in a good way. It sort of outgrew what they were able to handle. Like, it wasn't fair to the woman running it. She had to handle all of our stuff and deal with teens at the same time. It's just the infrastructure. So we sort of amicably agreed to sort of like part ways. It just got too big. So the Kobe Mandel Foundation, they've got a bigger infrastructure. They're dealing with children of trauma from all over the country. So that's, and they, that, you know, Seth and Sherry Mandel, who you met, you know, the parents of the boy who was killed, that's, they don't deal with the day-and-day operations of this. They had executive directors and they had board members that, you know, so they're sort of, they're the figureheads and the symbols of what the, of what it is, but they don't have to deal with the day-and-day. And then we got Dina and Jeremy, who are the producers.
And that helps, just as a comedian, and I'm sure every comedian says this, and you've probably heard it a million times, or maybe you haven't, but when, like, that's what made it so special for me, is not only am I doing a fundraiser for parents that lost their child in a terrorist attack, you know, in a terrorist, I don't even know if you call it, I guess it is called an attack.
Yeah.
A few children were killed, and the parents are at the show, and you're talking to them, and they're all, you know, positive, and they're so thankful that you're being there, and everyone in the audience has that same vibe, and it's like, it's so refreshing as a comedian when you don't have to perform for people that sometimes might not want to be there. When you're doing something that is for such a good cause, you're like, there's no way we're not all going to do well tonight. Like, has it ever been bad? Has anyone just bombed and it's this the whole show's bad?
Not really to the point where it's like the whole tour has been. Obviously, some shows are hotter than others. That you know, I find sometimes the first show or two, mm-hmm. everybody yells at us. It's funny. They go, "We want to go last." I can't control when theaters are available and when they're not, because they know that you guys write stuff along the way. That's mm-hmm. and you know you're a little more sharp towards the end of the tour.
Oh, some of the venues are that smart. They realize that.
Absolutely. They go, we know they write things while they're here. You guys are going to pick up stuff while you're there.
Holy
some guys
shit.
Do, like David Crow, for example. He's just never had a problem with material. And he's just that kind of guy. Like 80% of his act was about Israel by the time we left. It was just astounding. That, you know, he would just walk around with a notebook and pen and could just, he kind of like Gaffigan or, you know, Seinfeld, could just pick up the most normal thing of daily life and turn it into like a joke. The guy was just great with that. Or like a Regan, you know, guys could just come up with astounding stuff that, you know.
Funny, my closing bit to this, and I don't know how many years ago I was on the tour, probably like 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's 8 or 9. Yeah, something like that.
I still close, like when I do corporate events, with the joke about the speakers on the beach in Tel Aviv. Like, that's my closer.
That gets huge laughs. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's amazing. And
that. You have about me, making fun of me gets massive laughs because it's, you know, because it's funny. It's good heart, you know, it's good natured ribbing, which I thought was hilarious. I'd laugh at it. You remember that joke about the.
The one on the beach.
Yeah, with a girl. When I turn to you, I say, obviously it's embellishment. It's funny. I go, see that girl? That's my type. Really, Avi? The girl with the perfect skin and the long dark hair and the great body? That's your type? Thanks, Avi. You know,
I didn't know.
With the, you know, like you're just ripping into me as if like that's some, you know.
I still remember having I don't do the joke anymore, but I remember having a joke about some guy that was yelling at the top of his lungs in the hotel at the person behind the counter, and it didn't even faze anybody.
Just totally normal.
I forget what the joke was. I don't remember it.
But it's, yeah. And so that's the kind of stuff that I remember Brian Regan was doing a joke about. It would get an applause break. I mean, he's so funny anyway, but it's about, he showed up to passport control he hands them, you know, his paper, here's the thing, you know, the flyer mm-hmm. of the show I'm doing. And he leans in to listen to he couldn't hear them behind the glass, the plexiglass, the passport control. And he just hears, stand up. So he stands back up and she yells at him again. And he leans in and she goes, stand up. So she stands up again and this goes back and forth. And then he finally leans in and she goes, are you here doing stand-up? So it's like that, you know, and it was just that kind of fun. You know, it's going to come from experiences, and a comic that good can obviously craft it into something that's going to, mm-hmm. you know, demolish what you did. But it's, you know, I tell them, I go, even if you're not last, I go, so you hear more of who they are. Some comics make that conscious choice. Like Dennis Regan did that. He said, I came up with stuff, but I wanted them to know more about me. So he would do more of that. It's not like he still didn't do great. I mean, he was still crushing at every show. So it depends. Like I said, I would bring them down like, well, we were first or second in this tour, but we want to go last because they might write more stuff about Israel. I go, but you're not going to hear more about them. So they go, okay, I guess that makes sense. So they kind of calm down after.
Yeah. You know. And Tel Aviv is the kind of place where you could do your act. You could do your act exactly how you do it anywhere else. There's not a lot of places that you could go in the world that are that far from where you live, and you could keep your act exactly the same.
Well, that's what the comics would ask me. They'd say, what do we do? The whole answer. I go, just do your act. Don't do it. I go, whatever worked in 1997, as long as it's not a topical joke about like Clinton or something, like will work now. Because they're a smart audience, as you know, they just haven't heard a lot of stand-up. So some of these cities, like in Renan or Modi'in, they go to comedy shows twice a year when this tour comes through. So they appreciate seeing it, and they haven't heard a lot of, you know, we're sort of spoiled a bit in the United States. We can go to comedy clubs whenever we want in a lot of cities. You know, they can't do that as often.
I bet the invention of streaming television and Netflix has changed the landscape completely for stand-up comedy. Now everybody's watching tons of it.
Oh yeah! Look, Jim Jeffries did a tour in Israel, and he sold out like a basketball stadium. You know, because they can check by clickbait. You know, like who's clicking on what? What are they watching here?
It's interesting because you know in the United States people watch what they know that's already popular. So you go over to Israel, are they watching Jim Jeffries? They obviously have access to the internet. They know who has a huge following, but are they just going by what they think is funny? Because that's what I wish comedy was, but it's not.
Yeah, it's different now. If you look at the biggest comedians in the world, you know, Gabriel Iglesias just sold out Dodger Stadium. Does he have a sitcom? No. Has he been in movies? Maybe small, you know, yeah, none that bit. Are like, you know, are going to put you on the map. It's a different ballgame now. It's, you know, can you generate a following online by doing other stuff? If you can have one bit that goes viral, that's, you know, you're the guy that, you know, so that's, it's a different world now, I think.
Well, when you book this tour now, I'm jumping in time so much, but when you book the tour now, do you have to look at people's followings, or do you just pick who do you think is going to make the people in Israel laugh?
First and foremost, I the latter, you know, who's going to do a great job and make them laugh, because it's a lot of the people showing up, like, you know, they're not following those things per se. A lot of them are, you know, people who are married with kids and they're, you know, 30s, 40s, that's the majority of our audience, or 50s, whatever. So they're not necessarily comedy aficionados, but I will get the requests from people. Have you seen this guy on Dry Bar? Have you seen, bring this person, bring that. You know, I'll know most of them. You know, every now and then there's one that I don't, but I'll check with other comics. Like Ray Allen's been very helpful to me as far as, you know, if I end up stuck. This just happened this last tour. One comic last minute couldn't make it for various reasons. And, you know, I had to sub in. So Dan Natterman is coming on this one. This one will be Ian Lara, Dan Natterman, and Jim Colleton.
Dan's probably been there more than anybody.
Well, Dan did the very first one ever. It's weird. People ask, like, well, how many Comedy for Kobe's has he done? I go, just one. No, I think two, actually, because he
came on the first
one. That was the experiment. Then he came on one when it was not for charity. Then he came on the one for Crossroads. And then he went on a Comedy for Kobe.
What's Crossroads?
Crossroads, that's the one that works with the teens at risk in the Jerusalem area.
Oh, that was the name of their
company. But then we sort of switched to the Kobe Mandel Foundation.
Now, how does the Mandels approach you to connect this tour to their fundraising?
I needed a charity. Once we sort of left the Crossroads situation, I needed a charity because, you know, the people that were getting the checks, the donors can't write it to me. They don't write it to Avi Lieberman. You need to write it to the charity so they can – it's a 501c3. It's a charity so they can write it off and everything's, you know, above
board. And do you think the people funding this tour would fund it if it wasn't for a good cause and raising money for something?
I think they like the idea of bringing laughter and joy to people that don't – to a group that desperately needs it, you know, to a group that doesn't get it. I think it has its own merits, but the fact that it goes to charity is obviously a much added bonus. So it's because this isn't anything I started like this is going to be how I'm going to make my fortune. That's not how I started this. It was funny because I needed a charity, and I would get some emails from like random massive Jewish charities, you know, go, hey, listen, I know this sounds crazy, but, and I would explain it. And one charity I met with, they go, let me get this straight. We don't pay the comedians. I go, no. We don't have to pay for their flights. I go, no. We don't pay for their hotels. I go, no. And we keep every penny from the gate. I go, that's correct. Too good to be true. Forget it. Like, only Jews would think that way. It's, you know. So then it was so ridiculous. I was turned down by like three of them. They couldn't believe that this was real. So one guy goes, I didn't know this guy. I just sent back a random email that I would get from one of these huge charities sending out, blasting their email to the world. You know, hey, sending money to help this, whatever. The guy goes, I know who you are. I've been to your shows in Israel. And then when I was rejected from his charity, he goes, I'm so disgusted with my boss's answer. I'll have a charity for you by the end of the afternoon.
Whoa.
Okay. And he calls me back. I remember I happened to be in Israel at the time, and I remember where I was crossing the street, you know, on Ibn Gvir Roll, and my phone rings. He goes, Kobe Mandel Foundation. I go, their board said, he goes, yeah, because, you know, as soon as you hear the word board, there's going to be at least one Jew who's going to find a reason not to do something. Mm-hmm. And I go, he goes, yeah, their board already agreed, but they're going to do what Seth and Sherry say. And this guy, he goes, their executive director's been to your shows, and he already likes them. They would love to be the beneficiaries of this. And so then I learned later, they never told the board. They just did the show, made the money, and then went to the board and go, you want to keep doing this? I go, yeah, sure, I guess. You know, it's proven to work. So, and that's how it started. But the nicest thing, Seth Mandel, who you met, the father of the boy who was killed, he came up to me. I remember the very first show we ever did for them, and I think it was actually Natterman on stage, was on there crushing, and he just turns to me. He goes, you know, everywhere we go, people walk on eggshells around this, because, like, what do you say to somebody who had a child killed the way he was killed, you know, right. Beaten to death? And all? They go, now all of a sudden people are coming up to us going, this is great. When's the next one? You know, all of a sudden Sherry and Seth Mandel, they'll go, we're more accessible just because these non-Jewish comedians we don't know come over and do these shows. He goes, this is great. We do this again at cost.
Wow.
You know, and the executive director chimes in and goes, let's not go crazy. It's just funny. But that made me feel good that they, you know, they love this. And as you know, they love talking to the comics and, you know, right. They also help the comics. It's interesting. I brought, you know, Greg Rogel, right? Who's a phenomenal comedian.
Yeah.
One of the funniest guys in the world. But Greg is a quick fuse. You know, he can get upset about stuff. You know, this isn't anything I wouldn't say if you're standing right here and probably laugh if I said this. Greg can get, you know, upset.
That's why
about
him stuff. And I get along, I think, because we have the same accidental blow-ups.
Interesting. Seth is a huge fan of his, right? Loves him, and I think vice versa. Because I think he realizes, you know, he's going through tough stuff, and it, you know, it's easy to get angry at things. But this Greg sort of calmed out. He jokes now, it only lasted a few weeks. But he realized, like, maybe I shouldn't be so angry that, you know, my phone isn't working the way it's supposed to today. Look what this guy went through. Look what Seth Mandel went through. And he still has a positive outlook on life and is positive. Maybe I shouldn't be so angry over the little things.
Wow. That sounds like that's like a movie script right there. They're actually teaching people to lighten up.
Because, you know, Seth calmed him down. It was very funny. It was
interesting because in a weird connection, I watch tons of documentaries, and the other night I'm looking on I had the NFL Network on. I'm like, holy cow, there's going to be 10 documentaries in a row on that show, A Football Life, on different quarterbacks, 10 of them. And I'm like, last night I was like, let's watch the Randall Cunningham one. You know, I'm a Philly guy. I'll watch Randall Cunningham. And I didn't know he lost his 2-year-old son who drowned in his pool in his backyard. And now later in life, Randall Cunningham became a minister, started his own, you know, basically almost his own kind of religion, his own church. And he baptizes people into this church in that same pool that his child drowned in at 2 years old.
Yeah. He turned a negative into a tragedy into a positive. That's kind of similar with the Mandela.
That's awesome, you know, because definitely Rogel went through some dark times, and if that helped him out, and it helped me out when I went out there. I was at a very anxious time in my life. I was always afraid to fly on airplanes, and I had just started taking antidepressants, and my anxiety kind of went away, and I was like, not only am I gonna fly more, I'm going to fly to Israel where everybody...
a great job, by the way.
And so you had the best advice. You go, Joe, if you could find one person that says they didn't have a good time when they went to Israel, and I don't even mean comedian. If you could find one person in the world that went to Israel and didn't have an amazing experience, then you shouldn't come. I couldn't.
That's what I tell comics. I go, well, the safety, I go, find one person who said they didn't feel safe. By all means, don't go. But, you know, you won't. So That's what I tell him. That was advice given to me by Benji Lovett, who used to work. He's a comic in Israel. I grew up with him, and like, you know, he was in, we went to the same summer camp. And I would ask him, because he was in charge of bringing kids over to like these year programs and things like that, and other programs for a few months. I go, how do you convince the parents? He goes, that's the approach that we're told to take. You know, because the media is one thing, and the reality on the ground is another. You know, so that's what I would do. So, and I tell the comics, even when they're just like, well, how's the tour? I go, because I'm obviously biased. I go, talk to the other comics that have been.
Right.
That's all I'll tell you. I'm not going to try to convince you, because it's not fair, and it's not an accurate assessment.
Right.
Because you're hearing it from the guy who arranges it. I'm obviously going to be biased. So go talk to Joe. Go talk to, you know. I still remember you were one of my favorite moments, because that was you, Brian, Kylie, and Modi.
Yeah, that's right. Modi, too. Yeah.
And Modi is, you know, demolishes with Jewish audiences. He has so much inside stuff. You know, he just knows what he's doing. And it's, you know, so Modi's backstage. This, I remember, and Brian, Kylie, I don't think they knew each other beforehand. You know, and Brian was the head writer for Conan O'Brien for, 20 years?
Yeah.
Brian is just joke. And Brian's on stage, and he's just, I remember the first show, I think, was Renana, and he's just destroying, just joke, bang, bang, bang. And Modi's back, all of a sudden, he's watching. I think you were back there talking to me or to your wife or something. And Modi, all of a sudden, I walk out, and Modi looks at me, and he goes, this guy's a freaking genius, right? Modi's like, maybe I can't sort of walk through this. I can't just, you know, phone it in tonight. I'm going to have to, like, really bring it up. And he killed. Did you? The funny thing is, then I went upstairs, and you did great, of course. And then Modi goes on, and we walk to the back of the theater. I was with Brian Kiley, and Brian turns to me as Modi's killing. He goes, I don't ever want to follow this guy. He goes, just leave the order the way it is. You know, it's funny. And that's how I know it's a good tour, when each comic is like, you know,
following Modi in Israel would be like following what's his name? God, who's the comedian in L.A.? Everybody,
it'd be like following Gabriel Iglesias at Dodger Stadium. No, you don't want to.
I'm trying to think of who's the comedian used to go on at Miyagi's at the end of the show every week.
Alonzo or Dane Cook?
Dane Cook. That would be like following Dane Cook in 2002 in Los Angeles, at Miyagi's.
No, yeah, he was doing stuff, and Brian's just like, what's he talking about? It's just like, I don't know.
Maybe Judy Gold could pull it off, but yeah, I don't know about anyone else who's following Modi in Israel.
Yeah, that's great. We use Modi now for like the Sukkot, the holiday special. I'm doing that with Elon Gold. We sort of rotate between Modi and Elon. Doing like the special over that holidays.
So what's the drama going on now? You said there's some sort of drama with the tour right now.
One comic who couldn't make it last minute because we didn't realize flights. This is mostly on my end. You know Jeremy Hotz?
He's
phenomenal.
Yeah.
So Jeremy was going to go, but Jeremy has his own, you know, he's got anxiety. Also, you can relate, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't find flights. So like, you know, we'll sort of do a thing. I'll either give you X amount of money and you handle the travel yourself, or we'll book the business class seat for you. So everybody, the comics just go, just give me the money and I'll do it myself. And I say, if you book a coach seat or you find it used miles, keep it. I don't care. And the charity prefers that too. It's much easier for them as well.
Right.
So because of the gas stuff and all the craziness, business class flights were like $6,000. It was the cheapest thing we could find. And Jeremy has, he's got the therapy dog he's got to bring with him. And it got crazy. Like, we couldn't find anything.
So his anxiety's on a high level.
Yeah. And the poor guy, he's like, he's such a great guy, you know, and he's so funny. I was like, I will do anything to try to get him over there. But this is the first tour where we're missing one of our big donors' checks because of COVID. You know, it's thrown everything for a loop as far as fundraising and what money's available. So all of a sudden, Jeremy couldn't make it. I mean, I'll make it, you know, obviously every effort to, you know, to get him back there. We just want to do it when it's a little more easy, when things are less crazy. And so all of a sudden, like, we tried, you know, and Jody Lieberman, by the way, was his manager, could not have been more helpful. And she tried really hard, and we just couldn't find anything that worked. And I want Jeremy to be comfortable. You know, he's such a great guy and so funny. And so we'll get him there later. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, it's just like it didn't work. So we've only got like a month to try to figure this out. And
is it that hard when like someone has to cancel? I mean, it's such a great gig. Is it that hard to find someone to go to Israel and make good money?
It can be, because then Jeremy's also, keep in mind, like, he's, you know, he's on tour with his tour manager. You know, he's a high end guy. You know, he's got a lot of stuff going on. You know, he's doing us a favor
right.
by doing this for hardly any money.
But is that hard for you to fill his spot?
It can be just based on who's available. Cause, and it's all, well, it's hard for what I said before, as far as like, it's, you know, you want the tour to be balanced. You want it to be very right. different. So it's, and
so you're picky is what you're saying. It can't be any, I like that, but that's why it's successful. You're a little, maybe that's why we get along. I'm the same way. I'm like, I try to tell people, I go, listen, I don't book comedy shows. I'm like you, I'm a comedian. But if you want me to be the guy who's going to send you comedians, like I'm going all, it's going to be top notch and I'm not doing it low
end. Start there. That, you know, so that's that, you know, I also don't want, for example, I don't want a tour. Some of my favorite comics wouldn't do well there.
Sure.
I remember once, Dan Natterman was available. So he's coming. He's a great comic. He's done. He's familiar. He's sort of on the fly. He'll book a flight quick. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. You know, he was sort of a good fit. He'd been pestering me to go back anyway. And he's very well liked there, obviously. And he knows kind of what to do. So that's, and he's not more concerned about, oh, you know, the audience is so he sort of get, plus he's a good fit energy wise. He's more lower energy with great jokes. You know, it's more right. like, you know, I don't want three high energy Irish guys, for example, all at the same time. That's, you know, it's not fair to each yeah. of them. You know, you want a varied mixed show. He, Jim Colleton, and Ian Lara are polar opposites of each other. You know, their acts are so different.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Well, two things to wrap up the interview. So two things. And I hope you can tell it. We'll start with, start with telling that story of the comedian. I love the story of the comedian who he didn't listen to you and didn't fly a day early to, like, you know, give himself time to get used to the time. And he like flew right in and they put him in a car and took him right to the show. And you didn't have time to give him the lowdown of how he should.
Oh yes, this was Vinny Favorito. So it's He, in a way, it's not his fault because they sort of baited him. Our first show was in Beit Shemesh, which is like the most religious crowd we have, right? Mm-hmm. And it needs to be clean. It's whatever. So Vinny's flight, I think they had a cracked windshield.
And not only are they religious, everybody. I mean, these shows are in synagogues.
Not in synagogues.
The theater in this, there's like a theater in a couple of synagogues, aren't there?
Well, not for this one because we're doing theaters. It's in a good way, like too big a crowd.
Okay.
So we weren't able to get it. Like, he ended up flying in, thank God. He arrived, it's, you know, based on the delays and this and everything, as we were basically getting to the first show. But I had him going last. That was Brad Upton, Kira Sultanovich, and Vinny.
I love how you just know every show. You know, that shows how much you care about it.
Yeah, and so Brad goes on and kills, Kira goes on and kills, and Vinny comes running in sort of as we were starting, basically. I think Brad might have been on stage already. We had to send a separate cab to get him, you know. So he comes in, and I forgot, like, I just didn't have time. I remember Keep It Clean on this show, whatever. Like, I give a perfect example of this. Like, I remember once I walk out of the cellar once, and Dave Attell is there, one of the funniest guys in the world. And Dave looks at me and goes, hey, Avi, keep me in mind for that Israel gig. So I'm thinking, great, this is one of the best comics on earth. And I turn around, I go, Dave, you're comfortable doing 20 clean, right? And he stops, he looks at me, he goes, I could do it. And then we both laughed. He's like, maybe I'm not the right. You know, I don't want to hamstring him. He wants to do what he wants. You know, could he string together five or six Lettermans? Yes, he could. He doesn't want to. Like, he wants right. to do what he wants to do. You know, so I want comics that are like, no problem, we're clean, fine. That, you know, so, right. And Vinny does a lot of crowd work. So Vinny goes on stage, and I just didn't, you know, we didn't have time to, like, and it was partly my fault, remember, to keep it clean on this one. He goes on stage, he goes, I forgot, is this one where I'm supposed to keep it clean? And they go, no, they all baited him, and he goes, he goes off on the guy, and then he's being dirty, and it's working. And I can tell a lot of it is, like, shock.
It's working.
And there's this one, you know, and, like, very religious women with the hair covered, like, they don't touch men that aren't their husbands.
Right.
He's picking on this one woman and he's calling her a bitch so he finishes and he walks down and he gives her a hug and kisses her on the head. And I was exiting him at this point and the audience loses their mind and her face turns beet red and she's laughing and she puts her hands on her face embarrassed. And as Vinny's walking up the stairs, some little old lady tugs on his jacket. And he leans down and she whispers something in his ear and he face palms, like, you know, and then he walks out into the, And we didn't do the Q&A at the end. You know, we used to do the Q&A at the end. I'd bring all the comics back on stage and they'd ask questions. I was like, thanks everybody, good night. And I walk off the stage and Vinny's in the hallway and he's screaming as everyone is leaving, it's not Avi's fault, it's not the rabbi's fault, it's my fault. And of course, there are like four or five of the Holy Rollers who are surrounding Seth Mandel. That's why I tell you guys, listen, this, and they're upset. 90% of the crowd didn't come. A few people came up to me, they go, that was great, do this every time. I can't, look what's going on with Seth. You know, people who expect it to be clean,
right?
They were upset. So that's why I tell the comics, I go, look, it's not me who takes the heat. It's Seth who takes the heat. Like, the man has been through enough. Like, just do me a favor, you know, and keep it clean. So it's funny, Vinny went up the next show. And he got, can I curse on this podcast?
Yeah.
So then he goes on the next show, which was in, I think, Renana, which is not as religious. It's, you know, 50-50. And he walks on stage. He goes, you know, it's a very internet savvy, you know, they word spreads real quick in these communities. So he goes, he walks on stage. He goes, I guess some of you might have heard what happened last night. And everyone starts laughing. He goes, some of the apostles got a little upset at what I did. He goes, let me just say that I'm really fucking happy to be here. That's what he says.
That's hilarious.
A massive laugh. And then he wasn't dirty for the rest of the tour. I said, even in Tel Aviv, I go, Vinny, you could loosen up a little bit here in Tel Aviv. He goes, nope, not a way. I'm not doing it. So he was so self-conscious about what happened.
Well, that's nice of him.
Yeah, it was very funny. So.
Yeah, so the last thing is if people want to donate to the tour, how can they do it? I mean, maybe somebody listening.
You just go to comedyforkoby.com. They actually have a donate button there because sometimes, you know, comedyforkoby.com. Uh-huh. Or you just go to kobemandel.org.
Okay. And I'll put it in the description for the episode, everybody that's listening.
Yeah, if you do the comedyforkoby.com, buy like a show if you want to do that, because there are people in Tel Aviv who are single and don't have any money. No one moves to Israel to strike it rich. That's, you know, you're going for idealistic reasons. So a lot of them, like, I'll have to try to comp or see if the theater's big enough. But this year we have kind of a sizable theater. So if you want, just buy a seat in the back of the theater would be great. Or just there's a donate button. You can just do that and, like, you know, mention buying a ticket for a broke single or something. It's, you know, so we're trying to do that.
Right.
So.
Well, thanks, Avi. Dude, I would say I wish you luck, but it's great. It's still going.
Yeah,
20 years in.
Also traveling during the pandemic or not?
Oh, yeah. We wanted to talk about the book. Oh, my God. Yeah, how did the book come about the tour?
Oddly enough, right, from the comedy tour, because I went to Israel. I played hooky there for 7 months during COVID. I was so miserable in California. And I went and crashed in a friend's apartment. And once Israel started their lockdowns, I had COVID real early, so I had the antibody, so I didn't care. Uh-huh. So they had green lists. You could go to whatever country it was, come back, no quarantine. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going to 8 countries in 7 months.
Oh, wow.
And I wrote a book about it. It's up on Amazon called Traveling During the Pandemic.
Oh, wow. So look that up. I'll put a link to that, too, in the description.
Yeah, thanks.
Just send me the link. I'm sure it's amazing. Yeah, I love stories.
It's crazy. You won't believe the last 2 countries I went to, and you can't make this up, Russia and Ukraine.
Really?
Yeah. I can't make that up.
Oh,
and getting in and out of both was like the most insane situations, like out of an 80s comedy, bad 80s comedy movie.
Oh, like, my God. And
it's nuts.
Yeah, and I'm surprised someone hasn't, like, contacted you or maybe they have people that are interested in trying to put tours together in other countries. 'Cause I could think of one, and this girl and I were talking about trying to do it in Puerto Rico. I know this Puerto Rican female comic who bought a place over there, and now she goes there back and forth a lot. And one of my good friends who's actually in New York, he just texted me today. He made Puerto Rico his home, and like we were trying to put some sort of tour together there, and it's hard because most of the you got tourists mixed with people that speak another language, so you're like, at least in almost all Israel people speak English.
Yeah, we have native Israelis come to the show in Tel Aviv, but mostly it's sort of known that this is for like the Anglo community.
Right.
But Jim Jeffries' tour was not, his shows were in Tel Aviv, it's all Israelis pretty much.
Really?
It wasn't a problem. Yeah.
They just understand it.
Yeah. It's no issues as far as what to understand.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that on a phone call off of the podcast. If this Puerto Rico thing comes into play, you'll have some advice of how you could get it going and maybe how it could work in another
country. Bring comics from Florida. That's the easiest thing.
Bring comics from Florida and the harder part is, are they going to, where do you put the tour? You know, do you want, and how do you get people to come to it? It's not easy. I mean, you put a fundraiser together, it helps.
It'll take a while, that's normal. That shows, it's going to take, no one's going to be massively successful out of the gate. Just, you're going to have to accept that.
Right.
That's just how it is.
Start small and build, right?
Yeah. I remember when I came to so when I was acting more, I got a sitcom, a guest part in a sitcom real early in my career. Mm-hmm. So, and then people were like, I haven't seen you on TV, Avi. And I tell my friends, I go, they don't let you do surgery after a year in medical school, do they? That's some time, give me a break.
Exactly. All right, dude. It's good catching up.
You too. Always great to see you, buddy, and hear from you.
And thanks for we went an hour. We went an hour. I wanted to go shorter, and we went an hour. I mean, I guess that's a good sign. But we'll talk soon. I'm sure I'll be texting you.
Yeah, anytime. All right, buddy. Great to hear from you.
All right, dude. Good to see you.
It's out of the family.
All right, bye. My upcoming dates. Here we go. This Friday, May 27th, I'll be in Sellersville, PA at the Sellersville Theater doing Remember When. June 16th through the 18th, I'll be at the Stress Factory in Bridgeport, Connecticut doing Remember When for three nights in a row. If you want tickets to either of these, just go to joematarese.com.